Every society, Rabbi Wein continues, needs physical symbols to validate its faiths and aspirations. That is why countries have flags and seals. The fruits of the land of Israel became the flag and seal of the Jewish people, vis-a-vis its beloved homeland. The pieces of fruit served to remind Jews of who they were and where they came from, and most importantly, where they really were heading. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 136, the Aliyah of 1211. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. Let us speak of the venerable tradition among Ashkenazic Jews to partake of Karab, or in Yiddish, Buxer, on Tu B'Shvat, the day that is called the Jewish New Year for trees. In understanding the origins of this tradition, we must understand that Tu B'Shvat in the Talmud is nothing but a halachic, or Jewish legal, deadline. There are special obligations in the Torah pertaining to the produce of the Holy Land, including Terumah and Maaser Perot, tithing off portions for the Kohen and Levi, from each year's crops. The date of the 15th of Shvat, or Tu B'Shvat, defined the end of the year for the Holy Land's fruit and the beginning of the next year. It is, in other words, the end of the fiscal year for fruit. Because the laws of tithing apply only to fruit grown in the Holy Land, because tithing is, in Talmudic terms, a mitzvah tuliyah ba'aretz, a Torah obligation that applies only to the land of Israel, the 15th of Shvat became, throughout the centuries, for Jews in the diaspora, a day of reconnecting to the fruit of the Holy Land by the eating of fruit on which the obligation of tithing would have applied. And among Ashkenazi Jews, there was one fruit grown in the Holy Land that everyone ate, and that was carob, known in Yiddish as buxer. Buxer is a fruit that is native to the Holy Land, but it is certainly not the most celebrated one. And if Ashkenazic Jews ate buxer on the 15th of Shvat, it was because it was the only fruit that could survive the trip from the Holy Land to Eastern Europe. It was, in other words, the only way to reconnect to the obligations of tithing, to reconnect to the fruit grown in the land that was obligated in tithing, to connect to the land that these Jews loved so much. Rabbi and Chef Gil Marx reflected that, quote, in the days before quick transport and refrigeration, the carob's hard, dry texture made it one of the few fruits grown in the land of Israel, capable of withstanding long-distance shipping without spoilage, and therefore was available to Ashkenazim, end quote. In other words, buxer became a symbol of love for the land of Israel, one grounded in and expressed by the special laws that apply to the fruit of the land of Israel. And it's with this in mind that we can appreciate a remarkable aliyah, ascension of Ashkenazic rabbis from Western Europe to the Holy Land, to Jerusalem, in the year 1211, an aliyah which speaks profoundly to our own age. As we have seen, the conquest of Jerusalem by Saladin allowed for the return of Jews to Jerusalem. And this saw, under Saladin and his successor, the ascension to the sacred city of Jerusalem, not only of Jews from the Middle East, but also of Jews from much further away. A Sephardic work written in the 1500s describes a remarkable event among Ashkenazic Jews that occurred in 1211, in which members of a school of rabbis from France, Germany, and England known as the Tosafists, whose commentary, Tosafot, is so essential to Talmud study to this day, left Western Europe and went to the land of Israel. The work, titled Shevet Yehuda, states as follows, quote, in the year 4971, God inspired the rabbis of France and England to go to Jerusalem. They numbered more than 300 and were accorded great honor by the king. They built for themselves synagogues and houses of study. Our teacher, the great Kohen, Rabbi Jonathan HaKohen, went there as well. A miracle occurred. They prayed for rain and were answered, and the name of heaven was sanctified because of them. End quote. 4971 is the year 1211. The historian, Rabbi Dr. Ephraim Kannerfogel, who cites this passage, notes that we cannot confirm that an aliyah of such a large size occurred, with the only source for it being this text from several hundred years later. However, he writes, quote, we do know that Rabbi Samson of Sens, Rabbi Joseph of Clisson, Rabbi Baruch ben Isaac of Worms, author of Sefer HaTrumah, Rabbi Samson of Kusi, their students, and perhaps some additional Tosafist colleagues did emigrate to Israel circa 1211. End quote. These are enormously important rabbis. This would mean that the 13th century saw the arrival in Jerusalem of some of the significant rabbis in Jewish history. First the Tosafists, and then, as we will see, Nachmanides, one of the greatest rabbis in the history of Judaism, who came in 1267. Why did the Tosafists come to the Holy Land in 1211? Rabbi Kannerfogel cites several explanations, including that of Ephraim Urbach, who, quote, sees in the emigration of 1211 a reaction to the worsening economic and political situation of northern French and English Jewry, especially as indicated by the expulsion of the Jews from the royal dominions in northern France from 1182 through 1198. At the same time, political conditions in the Holy Land were becoming more favorable for Jews. This view, Rabbi Kanefogel continues, that the emigration was politically or economically motivated, is held also by Ar-Chazan, who attributes the emigration to special taxation of the Jews by the English monarch John Lackland and the French King Philip Augustus. Indeed, an especially heavy exaction was ordered by Philip in 1210. End quote. Thus, this aliyah occurred at the same time of persecution and hardship for Jews in Western Europe. Yet, while Rabbi Kanefogel agrees that these political and social situations did indeed exist, he argues that this alone cannot explain the aliyah, for traveling from France and Germany is a dramatic trip in the 13th century. And given that social suffering and political persecution could have been alleviated by the finding of another location in Europe, there must have been a different reason, in his view, that drew these rabbis to the Holy Land and to Jerusalem. It was, he argues, a love for the mitzvot, the performance of the commandments of God, and the recognition that the land of Israel has special commandments that apply to the sacred fruit of the sacred land. Rabbi Kanefogel writes, citing one of the Tosafists who ascended to the Holy Land, that, quote, when Rabbi Moses Taku, a German Tosafist of the 13th century, reached Israel and wanted to describe his accomplishments, he is quoted as saying, with thanks to the Almighty, we have been privileged to come to the land and to fulfill in it the precepts of tithing and giving priestly gifts every day at all times, even from the small amounts of vegetables bought at the market. Even though there are some authorities who are lenient in this matter, we are strict about it, end quote. Meaning, even though there may have been reasons not to be stringent in specific cases of tithing, the rabbis that came from Europe went out of their way to be especially careful in the performance of these commandments. Thus, the ascension of significant rabbis in the year 1211 seems to reflect something profound about the Jewish connection to the land and how this Jewish connection to the land is through special mitzvot woven into the fabric of Jewish law itself. And this, as I have argued in an article in Mosaic, is also what Buxer on Tu B'Shvat is all about. In his Laws of the Rules Pertaining to the Fruits of the Holy Land, the Mishnah presents us with the following halachic conundrum. Suppose a tree is planted on one of the Holy Land's borders so that its roots are sunk in the sacred soil of the land of Israel, but its branches extend into the airspace of what is known as Chutz La'aretz, outside the land of Israel. Is the fruit growing from this tree in the airspace of the land outside Eretz Yisrael considered the fruit of the Holy Land because the roots of the tree are in the land's sacred soil? Is the fruit therefore obligated in tithing in the laws relating to the 15th of Shvat? Or is it not the roots, but rather the airspace that matters, and therefore this fruit is considered fruit that grew outside the Holy Land? The Mishnah's answer is that if a tree is rooted in the land of Israel, then even if its foliage extends into the airspace of a less sacred land, the fruit is considered produce of the land of Israel itself. The fruit is sanctified by its roots. This rabbinic text can be taken in tandem with another, and just bear with me through this Talmudic technicality, ladies and gentlemen, for one moment. The Talmud presents us with lengthy delineations of Hilchot Shechinim, the obligations we owe our neighbors. One such rabbinic ruling is that we may not plant a tree near our neighbor's well, even if that tree is on our property, because the roots will extend underground into the neighbor's water supply. Any tree, therefore, according to the Talmud, must be planted 25 cubits away from our neighbor's well. The Talmud then adds that there is one fruit tree that has particularly long roots and which must therefore be placed even further away. The charuv, the carob tree, must be placed 50 cubits away, for its roots extend longer than any other tree. In other words, the buxer, per the Talmud, has longer roots than most Israelite fruit trees. And to eat the buxer, we might say, is to reconnect with Jewish roots to a holy land. Jewish roots, which, as we have seen, are definitive. Thus, the Jews in, say, Poland, by eating of the fruit of the Holy Land, reestablish their own roots in the Holy Land, even though they were very, very far away. And in remembering the laws that applied specifically to the produce in the Holy Land, the laws that the Tosafists ascended to perform, they remembered the sanctity of the Holy Land itself and thereby reconnected to the land of their forefathers. I was very taken by a reflection on Buxer and on the laws of the Holy Land that is found in an article by Rabbi Beryl Wine, because he, like myself, grew up in the frozen territory known as Chicago, Illinois. Rabbi Wein remembers Buxer in Chicago, as do I, and I cite his words now, quote, "I remember that as a child in the freezing Chicago winters, my parents would insist on my eating a piece of Buxer, carob, to commemorate Tu B'Shvat. The Buxer was hard as a rock and tasteless as wood. Yet I noticed that my parents, Jews of an earlier generation who were born before there was a state of Israel, or a time when free and open worship was really allowed at the Western Wall without Arab or government interference, ate their pieces of Buxer slowly and with great affection. Only later in my life did I realize that eating that piece of Buxer validated their hope and belief that the land of Israel would yet flourish and grow under Jewish sovereignty, and that the vineyards and orchards of the land promised to us by our prophets would become abundant reality. Every society," Rabbi Wein continues, "needs physical symbols to validate its faiths and aspirations. That is why countries have flags and seals. The fruits of the land of Israel became the flag and seal of the Jewish people, vis-a-vis its beloved homeland. Even when there was little Jewish population and no Jewish sovereignty present there, the pieces of fruit served to remind Jews of who they were and where they came from, and most importantly, where they really were heading." And Rabbi Wein adds, "In 1882, Baron Edmund de Rothschild's Carmel East Wine Company produced its first bottles of wine in Rishon LeZion. At that time, Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, Netziv, was the Rav and head of the famed yeshiva in Volozhin in then Lithuania. He was also the titular chairman of the Chovavei Tzion, the Lovers of Zion, the organization that encouraged Jewish immigration to the land of Israel and helped support monetarily the nascent but growing population of the Yishuv HaYashan, the pre-Zionist settlers in the land of Israel of the 19th century. His nephew, Rabbi Baruch HaLevi Epstein, the author of Torah Tamima, a popular commentary to the Torah, lived with his uncle and aunt in their home while being a very young student at the yeshiva. He recorded for us in his writings that the Carmel Wine Company sent a bottle of wine from its first production efforts to Rabbi Berlin in recognition of his efforts on behalf of the Jewish settlers in the land of Israel. When that bottle of Israeli wine finally reached the small village of Volozhin and was delivered to the house of Rabbi Berlin, the great rabbi entered his bedroom and changed into his Shabbat garments in honor of a bottle of wine produced by Jews from the grapes of the Holy Land, and upon which all of the agricultural mitzvot of the Torah had been fulfilled." End quote. This citation from Rabbi Wein about, well, wine, as well as about Buxer in Chicago, reminds us of the laws that applied to the land, the laws that linked Jews to the land. And it may have been a desire to perform these laws that brought some of the greatest rabbis of France and Germany to the Holy Land, who came as soon as they were able, who tithed their fruit in the land of Israel, and who proudly could have proclaimed this year in Jerusalem. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, signing off.